Well, this, wait, Scott always fucks me up now. Do we do the rundown now, or do we do the loot crate read?
We do the loot crate read.
That's what I thought, but then remember Scott said it wasn't.
You know what? He's not here. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, he's not even editing them anymore. This is my goddamn show now.
We can
now.
Do what we want. Anarchy. We don't have to number these anymore. We can say this is episode...
Goldfish. I didn't number the San Diego Comic-Con episodes. I hope he felt good about that. Oh, Lord. We had a discussion about it.
I know.
That'd be cheating. You can't.
But...
You can't. No,
if you look at our actual number of episodes, we're like nearing 300, I think.
We are. We have secret ones in there. Yeah.
So this episode's like, what? Nope. Nope. Did not happen.
Good try.
Thank you. Take two. Host Matt
and I'm Ash
and we have a special host. Wait, I was gonna announce you, god damn it.
you have to tell me this shit, man.
You're off. Get out. You're off the podcast now.
I quit.
Ruined my introduction.
I'm sorry.
I'd love to introduce Kate Dollarhide.
Yay. Welcome back.
It's good to be back.
Kate, do you know how many times you've been on the show? I don't remember.
I'm gonna say four.
Four or five. You were on the last PAX, I think, East show, right? You were on our PAX East show.
Yeah, I was on the Saturday show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Saturday show. You were on. Didn't you play a game with us last time, too?
Yeah, I played the Netflix game.
The Netflix game, that's right.
Yeah.
Which was right around episode 200-ish. 200-ish. Well, thanks for coming back at literally the last minute. I think I was about to sit down and eat some food, and I was like, we should get somebody else in there. We should tag in Kate. So welcome back.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome.
We should say Scott is off with fatherly duties and hopefully will and fatherly duties and will hopefully be back soon enough. Everybody get that? That was a good one. That was a solid pun.
That's not the first time you've made that joke on the
show. Oh, god damn it. Kate. What are you doing to me?
All these jokes are repeats at this point. 210 episodes. Let's actually get transcripts of the first 20 episodes and then just reread those.
I want somebody to make a wiki for us and list all the jokes.
I really. There's going to be four jokes.
That would be so good. Yeah. No, there'll be more.
Four?
Maybe. I mean, you have a large repertoire of dick jokes.
Yeah, that's true. It's my thing.
This episode is brought to you by Loot Crate. Loot Crate is the monthly subscription service that delivers a box full of awesome to your door. We don't really know anything about the upcoming August box except that it is the Villains 2 box. They That's did right. Heroes last month and they're doing Villains again this month.
Yeah.
I know last time, what did we get? We got Deadpool socks, I think was the Villains box.
It was. We got Deadpool socks. We got a cool Joker Loki crossover shirt. I remember that from a year ago. Why do I remember that? All sorts of cool stuff. I actually remember the box for that one a lot because it had Joker stuff all on the
inside. Yeah, it was like a Batman theme, right? The Joker theme box.
Yeah.
So if you go to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and sign up with the code ratedNA, you get 10% off your subscription, whatever length you choose, and you help out the podcast, which is nice.
And we will give you virtual high fives.
There we go.
Yeah.
Let's do the rundown.
Today, we're going to talk about Netflix, and they announced some new shows and canceled one that I don't think any of us will miss. As far as I know, maybe Kate watches this show. I have no idea. We talk a little bit about Ouya, and its untimely demise and what that means for indie developers. Xbox One, new games of gold for August, and some new ways you can get premium cable channels into your face holes.
What?
And then we're going to review Ant-Man, and we're going to do our kind of like as much as we can wrap up, talk about, because we really only previewed Batman before. It's been weeks, but we're going to talk about Batman Arkham Knight because Ash and I have both completed it. I think almost. Have you 100%ed yet? I'm pretty close.
I'm like at 97 or something like that.
I'm just behind you at like 92 or 93. So, Kate, what have you been up to?
Oh, man. I have been not working a lot. I haven't been working at all, actually. I've been unemployed for a minute, so I've been job hunting, which is always a blast and a half. Which, not a blast and a half. In that time, I've been playing some video games, reading books, writing a ton, which is super good.
Awesome. That's good. That is a job of sorts.
Yeah. I participated in a game jam in the month of June where I made a dating sim with my friend Mari, who lives in Montreal. Two roots in a new city, date some people. It was a whole lot of fun. I think I learned a lot.
Can I ask you about your dating sim? Did it involve actual human beings, or was it like a strange, like anthropomorphic gopher love simulator?
Oh my God. No, that's what I wanted to do. I pitched magical creatures to Mari, and she was like, yeah, can we have this be like the one normal thing that we do? And I was like, fine.
The one normal thing.
So real humans in a fictional but normal city.
Oh, it's really interesting. And like, Mylan does the foreplay romance and games panel at all the PAXs. And it's always interesting to, I always learn about that genre every time I watch her panels, because it's honestly not something that I seek out personally. But it is cool that there are all these, you know, these games that are kind of, I think, just now really taking off in the States. I know they're huge in Japan, but I feel like now, like, a lot of these dating simulators are starting to get bigger here. And of course, that's my layman's perspective on it. They could be huge. I have no fucking idea.
No, I mean, I think you're right about that. Just this year, we've learned about a bunch of Japanese dating sims that are going to be brought to the United States, and some really unusual ones, too, like Yuri dating sims, where you're a woman dating women, which is pretty uncommon to see in the States, brought up from Japan. So that's going to be pretty big.
Yeah, I heard, I think on the last Foreplay Romance and Games panel, I forget which panelist it was, but they were kind of reviewing some like really strange, and I'm not saying that in a negative way. I mean, like literally strange. Like, you play a woman who's locked in a cage and like you're trying to get out and you have to get this guy to love you. It's like really like there's some really like kind of off the wall ones in Japan. So I'm interested to see if they actually ever make their way over here.
Yeah, that'll it'll be a treat. I know you'll love that.
For everyone, yeah. So what else has been going on?
Let's see. I've been reading a lot. I finished The Martian finally and started Nemesis Games, which has been interesting. Matt, have you finished that?
No. I think I'm only like, I think the Kindle tells me I'm only like 35% in. I started reading it really heavily at Comic-Con and then haven't had a chance at home yet, but hopefully finish it up soon.
Yeah, so I've been enjoying that.
How was The Martian?
How was The Martian? I want to know about that.
It's really interesting. So I've had a bunch of people recommend The Martian to me. They were all straight, nerdy dudes. And so I was a little hesitant. And I started reading it, and I was like, I don't know about this book. Because the voice that the main character is written in is very, like, kind of like average nerd guy. And there's a lot of, I want to say, off-color jokes. It reads like someone's goofy blog. And so I was not into that at first, but the story is really well paced and exciting and fun. And the little idiot grew on me. So I'm excited for the movie. The movie is this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually have this book on, I got it from Audible. So it's in my queue for things to listen to on my drive. So I was curious how it was.
This is sort of like, you know, to put it terribly, it's sort of like Castaway on Mars, right? Is that what I'm gathering?
Yeah. The basic premise, and this is not a spoiler at all, is that he is part of a team of the first people to visit Mars and do a little recon mission. Right after they land, a huge dust storm hits their encampment, and they have to abort the mission. But he gets injured in the process of their evacuation, and they have to leave him there. And so it's about him surviving on Mars until they can send someone back for him.
Huh.
What jerks leaving him behind?
They had to, man.
So what else? What else is going on?
I've been playing The Witcher.
Ooh, so good. Yes. I love it. I love the
Witcher. Hey, Witcher.
Witcher.
Hey, Witcher, come over here, Witcher. Show me what you got, Witcher.
I love that it seems like the game is voiced 90% by the guy who plays Blackwall in Dragon Age.
Oh, of course, yeah. I played that game for 300 hours, and all I heard like in my dreams was,
hey, Witcher, come here. Let's play a game of Gwent, Witcher.
Over and over again.
So that's been really fun. I was shocked by how much I like this game.
Right? I thought the same thing. I kind of liked 2. I thought 2 was okay. 3, I was like, I fucking loved it. And like, I don't know how far you are, but the last act of 3 is one of my favorite. It's like right behind Mass Effect 2 is one of my favorite endings for a game.
Really?
So, no, the ending of Witcher 3 is phenomenal. Like, you know how like most games these days just kind of peter out and you're like, oh, they ran out of budget, and you're just like, that's clearly what happened, and they just had to kind of end it.
Yeah.
Witcher's like goes the opposite, and they're like, oh, we want to like, you know, make the ending fucking colossal. It's like 10 hours long. It's like,
whoa.
It's awesome. It's great.
So I have no idea how far I am through the story, and I don't want to spoil anything by mentioning where I am, but I'm in Novigrad.
Okay. You're pretty far.
Oh,
you haven't gotten to the island yet, with all the Vikings.
No, that sounds great.
It is great. It's like the whole second half of the game. You're hanging out with Vikings, which is cool. Skellige.
I'm really glad that this game is only for next gen systems because it allowed them to do some pretty incredible stuff, just for the way it looks. And like the cities are populated by tons of people.
Isn't it crazy? Yeah, they really are living, breathing cities for sure.
So that is
they couldn't figure out how to make the horse AI actually function, though. So.
Oh, man. Poor Roach. That dude, like, doesn't understand how trees work.
It's kind of, like, adorable, though. You're like, Roach, come here. And he just, like, looks at you. You're like, you fucking horse. Why don't you do something? He just, like, stares at you from across the road. You're like, you're the worst horse ever.
He's mad for being named Roach.
I know, right?
Can't blame him.
Yeah.
Your horse is named Roach in this game?
Yeah. Roach the horse.
Geralt names all his horses Roach.
Yeah. That's true. He does say that, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm gearing up for some con travel, which has got me real, real antsy and nervous, but excited.
Awesome. Which one's he going to?
I'm going to Worldcon, which is Sasquan, because it's in Western or Eastern Washington this year, and that is going to be middle of August. And then the weekend following that is PAX. So I'm going to have crazy August.
It's going to be crazy.
I'm going to be a disaster by the time I get to PAX.
It's good. Everyone will be a disaster at PAX. It's like 4 days long of like, you know, mayhem. So
you guys planning anything for that?
Yeah, we got some stuff cooking.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Got some stuff a brewing. I mean, I'll be there for work, so I won't be there jumping up and down with joy, but I will be there doing some stuff.
And the rumor is that Scott and I will be there as well.
Will you really?
We will.
That would be so exciting.
Right? Has Kate ever been with all three? This sounds horrible.
Oh, my goodness.
It's not what I meant, guys. Oh, my gosh.
We're all happily married here.
Have you ever hung out with all three of us at the same time?
I haven't. I was with you and Scott at PAX Prime last year, and you and Matt at East.
Yeah.
It's a very different dynamic with all three of us. That's for sure.
But yeah, I'm really excited to see how that works out.
It's like the podcast in real time all the time.
That's totally the straight man. So,
am I? I guess
I think
so.
I'd say you are.
Scott could be the straight man, probably. Anyways. Kate, you have to pick somebody.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. I'm terrible at this. Matt, what are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I said, what are you doing?
Oh, I said, how are you doing? It'd be great to just box Ash out of this conversation. Just, I'm doing pretty good. So what have I been doing? We got back from San Diego. I edited a ton of stuff for the show, and I hope everybody enjoyed that. We're going to put like a page up that has all of the interviews from Comic-Con somewhere so that everybody can listen to them all till their heart's content. And I went and saw Ant-Man this weekend, and I was pleasantly surprised, so we'll talk about that later. Playing a bunch of Batman, trying to 100% it, getting close. And reading Nemesis game. So you had the same, I have the same concern you have. You tweeted about the thought that the female character appears to be getting damsel in distressed on this one.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm wary, but I hope it doesn't go in that direction.
I don't feel like it. My concern, I think, is less just because they've never given her that kind of voice before. You know, like she's never in that kind of position. She's almost always in a position of like control. And I think it's more, I think it's less damselly in distress and more what happens when she loses control of situations. I think that's what is more it's about, possibly, but I can see what you're talking about pretty clearly. So
yeah, that's fair.
We'll see. We'll see. I'm willing to give it.
It's very different, isn't it?
It's super different. And I mentioned that when we talked to them before the interview, I actually mentioned it to them. I said, this book feels very different. And they both just smiled at me and kind of shrugged. So I don't know what that means.
What does that mean? Yeah.
But they literally, I was like, this book feels different because you split the team up and like you've never really done that before, and they both just went like uh-huh and just kind of like shrugged. Okay, I don't know what this is, but they clearly didn't want to like ruin it.
Strange things were afoot.
Yeah. So I think I still love it. I don't know, they've done nothing yet to dissuade me from reading these books. Like I'm fully honest with everybody, like, because I hype these books to a lot of people and friends and work and stuff, and I'm always like, look, if you're like a Tolkien or a Game of Thrones guy, this is not like, while the world is very in depth and it makes a lot of sense, it's not that kind of book. But
definitely not.
But it does have like a really great narrative and a great team, and like you kind of get into the characters more and there's less of them, so it's kind of easier to follow for dummies like me than Game of Thrones. So that kind of stuff. But then I don't know what I'm going to read next. I've been trying to figure out what I'm going to follow next. I'm not sure.
Tweet at me. I have suggestions.
I know, right? But I kind of itching for biography stuff too. So I might do a nonfiction next.
I can't help you there. I don't care about real people.
And then beyond that, I think we've talked about this before. I send Ash and Scott screenshots of my stupid Fallout shelter, decent amount of times. I think I've broken it, guys. I think Comic-Con broke it once I got back, because I didn't play it for 3 days. And then I was like, oh, I don't have the stress of feeling the need to log in on this thing.
Oh man, I can't. I played maybe, I don't know, 10 hours of it, and it's the most stressful thing ever. I had to put it down.
Do you still play? Kate, you were playing, right, for a little while?
Yeah, I think I played maybe 15 hours of it. And like Ash, it was just too stressful because I was constantly thinking about, like, oh, my God, if I'm gone for too long, everyone's going to starve to death. And what horrible things are going to happen?
Yeah, it's the same, like, nightmare of, like, having a Tamagotchi, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, like, way too much pressure. Like, real life is hard enough.
I got into a weird groove where I wasn't losing resources when I would go away. So I could go away for like a day and come back, excuse me. And I might have like be a little low on water or something, but it'd be really easy to catch up and get ahead again.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like in this weird flow that like I was always fine. What started sucking more than anything else was that I would show up and I would forget that I'd left, I think, in four different like lodging rooms, whatever those are called, I forget. Yeah. I had left couples in them without thinking about it.
Uh-oh.
And every time I came back, they'd be like, these four are having babies and these other four babies were born. And I was like, oh my God, my team, my group of people went from like 70 to 100 and something in short order, like in a matter of a few days. I had exploded like 32 babies all over my shelter.
Oh boy.
and I couldn't get a hold of it. And then it was like, it hits a certain point. The bigger problem is that you can't actually do anything with the people. Like, there's, it's really hard to track. It's hard to move people from room to room. And like, it's really difficult. Like, I wish you could tap a room and then view the room list and then like assign somebody from there. But it didn't, unless I couldn't figure out the UI, I didn't feel like I could.
Oh yeah.
It was really cluttery at certain points, especially when it got that big, unless they were just not planning anyone to have 100+ people in a vault. It's like, it's very difficult to manage at that point how many people are coming in and out of the different rooms and who's just like, I would have like 5 people just literally walking around because I couldn't put them anywhere. Like, I had no room jobs for them. And it was really, it was rough, guys, but I gave it up. I think I haven't turned it on in like 2 days. This is a big, this is a wall of days for me to not look at Fallout Shelter.
It reminds me a lot of, so I spent a whole day playing Elder Scrolls Online, and that like MMO churn of quest after quest after quest reminds me a lot of Fallout Shelter because it's the same kind of gameplay mechanic.
Oh, it is completely. They also shouldn't let you revive people because...
Oh, yeah, they should stay dead.
Yeah, because I would like send people out and forget that I sent them out. And then I'd be like 3 days later, like, oh, geez. And I go look and they're like, yeah, they died a day ago. Like, they're very dead. And I'd be like, revive. And then they would bring all the money and gear back to me anyways. And I'm like, they really should have just been like, well, you should have looked at that guy more than 0 times.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I think I'm done. And I don't know what else I did. I'm watching some TV. I think that's about it. It's been, I guess we just recorded pretty recently. So hasn't been a ton of stuff. But
true.
Went on a bike ride.
Ooh,
I went on my first New York City bike ride.
Brave soul.
It's actually way better up here than it is in Orlando. That's what you would think. But up here, they put money into bike lanes and actually give you, like, it's called the Greenway, which is like, it's almost walled off from traffic. So basically just riding your bike and you don't have to worry about cars swinging in on you or anything like that. You have to worry more about other bikes than anything else.
Nice.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. I don't know when they started doing it, but there's a path in Brooklyn that wraps the whole river. So you can start up where we live and then go all the way down through like South Brooklyn into Red Hook, which I know this doesn't mean anything to anybody, but it's a really gorgeous ride along the river, and you have view of the city pretty much the whole time. So it's pretty nice.
Nice.
We did that this weekend, and then I bought Hum tickets. I didn't talk about this last podcast because we had so much to talk about, but one of my favorite bands of all time is playing a reunion show, and I bought tickets. And I wrote them a message on Facebook, like a kid, like a child would do with their heroes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And they were really nice. They wrote back, and they said, hey, thanks so much. You know, we're really excited to play. It would be awesome, blah, 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 blah. So,
cool. That's awesome.
Go listen to them. They're from the 90s. you guys want to talk about what Ash did?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so exciting.
Threw
guys.
You for a loop there, didn't I?
I was just gonna let it go because I was like, oh man, I get to skip myself. Yeah, honestly, there hasn't been a whole lot going on. It's just been crazy busy at work. I guess I don't know if I'll be on the next one because I'm going to Gamescom, which is crazy. So I'm going for work, which will be fun. I've never been to Germany, so that's fun too. So I'm going to Cologne for about a week.
Oh, man.
I know. It's absolutely insane. So it looks like I will have a little bit of free time out there too. So I'm going to see as much as I can see and eat as much as I can eat. And
you eat some sausages?
I'm going to eat so many sausages in my mouth while I'm in Germany.
You should.
But that's but that's the most exciting thing, I guess. I did go see Ant-Man 2, which I guess we'll talk about, and I also was pleasantly surprised. I had a couple minor gripes with it, which I guess I'll talk about. But other than that, the only big thing I've been playing is Batman, which I beat, and I really ended up liking Batman a whole lot. There was some stuff that I would have changed about it, namely, I thought that there was a little too much of the tank action, which I guess a lot of people are saying. I like the tank stuff. But I found myself like running around and gliding more than using the Batmobile. So I
at
just
a
was,
point. Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
I was just like, I'm like kind of over it. And plus, I got really good at the tank to the point where I started doing like the holodeck challenges or whatever. And you know, one of the challenges is like, you know, defeat 30 enemies without getting hit and with getting like a max multiplier of like 7 billion. And I fucking totally did it.
Yeah.
like without getting touched. So it's like, I don't know. I guess if you're good at shooters, the tank combat in Batman Arkham Knight kind of comes kind of naturally. So it was just a weird addition to a game that already had a really pretty awesome combat system. It was good, but it was just different. Not in a bad way. Other than that, what have we been watching? Still watching Sense8, kind of like struggling to get through it.
Really?
No. It's not that I don't like it. It's just I'm on episode 10 and something just finally happened.
Yeah. Like, you were talking to Nate online and you said something about it. And
yeah.
He was like, Melissa says, once you get to episode 10, it really opens up. And I was like, there is no show alive that I will sit through 10 hours of viewing before something happens inside of it.
Well, it's not that I mean, that's kind of just mean of me to say that nothing's happening. It's really, really well done character development. Like, you know more about these characters than a lot of shows, you know, 10 episodes in, because that's all it is. You're exploring these people's history and their relationships with one another and their, you know, basically their lives. And then, you know, their abilities kind of bring these people together and they all learn how to be better people from each other, you know, from all around the world at the same time, which is pretty cool. But at the same time, there's not a whole lot of action going on.
Yeah.
So.
Well, are you still here?
I am still here.
Okay. We have to say goodbye to Kate.
Oh, sorry, bye, Kate. Y'all. No, it's all right. Well, thanks for hanging out for our intro.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was fun.
Awesome.
We'll talk to you at PAX for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Later, and you might, if you're around next week, maybe you can be on again.
That'd be fun.
Yay.
Cool.
Yay.
All right. Thanks, Kate.
Bye.
Bye.
We offended her so much that she left.
Well, you know what? She shouldn't have talked over me during the intro.
Anyway, Sense8's okay, watching some shows, yada yada yada. You want to do some news?
Let's do it.
Yay.
News. So first up here, I thought I would mention, just because a lot of us watch a lot of Netflix and have and or might be cutting the cord or whatnot. They just put out two huge press releases to talk about new shows they've got coming up, and also that they're canceling one. So I wanted to mention this very quickly because it's going to be amazing. But in four short days, so 2 days after this comes out, Wet Hot American Summer will be on Netflix.
It's exciting.
The TV show. And we should all watch it because it sounds like it'll be hilarious.
Oh, hell yeah. I watched the trailer last night. It looks great.
Yeah, I can't wait. But they are picking up the show Longmire, which I never started, which was an A&E crime series.
Katie Sackhoff. So they're moving that to Netflix?
Yeah. So that's cool. Canceled from A&E and Netflix picked it up and will debut a new season coming up this year, I believe. And then or maybe it's the old season coming up and then they're going to do another season. But I believe they got picked up. They've also got a Keith Richards documentary called Under the Influence, which I will be watching because everybody knows that I am addicted to musical documentaries. They've got new comedy specials by like a list of comedians that I won't go through. And then Aziz Ansari's got a new show coming up called Master of None. So the show that they are canceling is Lilyhammer, which was the it was like gangsters, like New Jersey gangsters in, I think, Holland or Norway or something along those lines. And it starred one of the guys from Sopranos.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I had never watched it because it didn't really seem like it was something that would appeal to me.
Netflix came out and said they're not canceling it because of ratings or anything. They're just canceling it because I guess the financial deal they had with Norway to make the show like fell through or something. And it's just too expensive to make now.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, it's amazing all the shows that they have. And it's cool that so many are getting renewed. So they got some good programming.
Yeah, so I thought that was something worth talking about. This next one, I mean, this might be two guys who don't know a ton about it talking about it, but it is sort of big news in the gaming community as a whole.
Right.
But the Ouya, which was basically the first TV-connected Android device, right? It was kickstarted for a lot of money.
Yeah, it was going to be the only place to play your Android games on your TV.
Yeah, so the Ouya kind of went under and was bought out by Razer, the gaming peripheral company, who says they're going to keep making, I don't know if it's an Ouya specifically or an Ouya-like device or what, how this is going to pan out, but they now own the brand. Essentially, they bought it. But the bigger news was that there was a deal that they had called Free the Games. The money never made it to the developer, something along those lines. Now, yeah. Razer is basically saying that they're not going to honor that deal because of the bankruptcy. They don't really have to.
Yeah, I read a lot of indie developers are very upset with how they were treated by the Ouya guys, which is a shame. It's like, you know, those guys put a lot of hard work into making their game. And so sounds like, at least from an outsider's perspective, that they really got the raw end of the deal.
Yeah, I know that I think Destructoid posted an update, I guess, from somewhere, and the CEO of Razer, who's usually very vocal and out there and pro game and all that kind of stuff, came out and said that it's not definitely torpedoed yet. They may still try to work out something, but there's like legally nothing has happened yet, so there's nothing he can say that is definitive in any way, but that, you know, he understands it's a crappy situation and they're going to try and do right by developers. So hopefully that all works out because, you know, indie game developers are usually putting their sweat, heart and soul into these things and not always making it's rarer for the games that.
Did you ever think about getting one? Was it ever on your radar?
I actually did almost buy one when it first came out. I think Amazon ran a sale on the Ouya and I was like, you know, that'd be fun to have. And then I didn't end up picking it up. And I don't honestly even remember why. I just kind of never, be honest, I don't know that I would have used it a ton. So
yeah, my Fire TV has games on it and some good games. It has like Telltale stuff and a lot of, you know, the more popular indie titles are on the Fire TV. And, I don't use it all that often. I mean, that's just, you know, I think it's awesome that it can play them.
Yeah.
But it's strange. It's like I almost feel like a lot of those smaller games, not saying Telltale smaller games, but a lot of the smaller, you know, smaller kind of mobile, geared toward mobile titles are just better for a tablet or something than a giant TV. So
yeah, I think it'll be as it always is. I think it will be interesting when Apple enters the field with some new device, because everybody's saying that they're going to at some point.
Right.
And if they do it in the way that I think they would do it, and this is not, again, like, this is not based on any actual knowledge. I don't know anything from work and stuff about this, but as Matt Caron, the guesser of future tech, I think that it'd be smart of them to go the route of having it be like an iOS device, essentially, like running on the same core of technology. And in that case, they could release like a whole shit ton of games, because the iOS platform has a ton of games, you know, built into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be interesting to see if Apple can break that kind of that barrier of getting indie devs on your TV, not on a major console. So
yeah,
who knows, it's possible. But it's sad. Yeah, hopefully, I hope this all works out for indie developers, because it would be great.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully it goes their way in the end.
Yeah. So on to some happy news.
Free stuff.
Free stuff for Games with Gold. They announced, Major Nelson announced August's deals, and the Xbox One is actually getting Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes. You played this, right?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's a kind of a sneak peek at the new Metal Gear game. It's very short. I want to say I beat the whole thing and I don't know, 3 hours.
Yeah.
But if you want to check out the new systems, a lot of the new sneaking and gunplay, definitely check it out, especially if it's free. It's
free.
If you're a Metal Gear fan, you're going to be like, oh, this feels wonderful. They just streamlined everything and made it a little bit more accessible. So
half the time I end up grabbing those games and just not downloading them, like just putting them in my game vault so that I can just grab them later when I'm like, oh, I want to play some Metal Gear or whatever.
It's very smart.
It's the thing to do. And then also a game called How to Survive Storm Warning Edition. I don't actually know anything about this game. Do you?
I know nothing about it.
Looks like a zombie game.
Ah, yeah. I still like those.
I know
those.
You do. That's up your alley.
Yeah.
And then if you've got your 360 hooked up, you can pick up Metro 2033 and Metro Last Light, which are both great shooters, and especially for free. So
yeah,
those are some good games still giving content to the 360, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, it'll be around for a while.
So, and then the last bit of news is a pretty quick piece. I just wanted to say, to keep up with the sort of cable cutting means, HBO just announced that you will be able to get HBO Now through Verizon Fios, if you have Verizon Fios, which I think now means if you have Charter, Verizon, Android, or Apple, you can get HBO Direct from HBO. And then I know Showtime is Hulu, Apple, and Roku, I think. So it's getting pretty enticing. I don't know, but will you ever give up your cable? Because you're like me, we both have cable still.
Will you
ever give it up?
I think eventually I will. It's strange. I mean, there's some shows like Walking Dead, which there really is no next day option for.
Right.
You know, so it's funny. I think once shows like that fade away for me, then I'll probably, because I honestly don't watch too many live shows anymore. Yeah. I watch a lot of Netflix. I watch some stuff on Hulu. You know, some shows that, you know, like Shield and
get those on Hulu, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can get Shield's those on Hulu too. Yeah, but it's strange. I feel like I'm not quite ready to cut the cord, but it's such a freaking ripoff.
I feel like now I've been very active with my cable bill. Like, I've been actively managing what channels I'm paying for, and it's gotten a little better. Like, I've whittled it down as much as I can, but the problem is that I still pay for like 30 to 40 channels that I don't even go to remotely, you know, or ever turn on. And then I'm even paying for things like Nick Jr., which is like a channel that I will never watch ever, you know?
Right.
And then like, but I'm not paying for IFC because that's part of a different package, but I would love to have IFC. Like, if I could just pick out 30 channels that I wanted and say, these are the 30 I want, and I'll give you $40 for them, you know, and then I add these two premiums on for $10
each.
That would
be wonderful. Like, yeah.
That's really what I want. I don't necessarily want the world of internet TV. Like, I enjoy cable. I think it's a worthwhile service. I just want it the way I want it, you know?
They're very old-fashioned in their thinking, and it's not really fair at this point to the consumer. It's sort of like, you know, we talked about this at one of the first episodes of the show, is the difference in mentality between Blockbuster Video and Netflix.
Right.
It's just the way that they treat the consumer. It was a completely different sort of approach to providing content for people. And I think people are noticing that now with big cable, and big cable's like, no, we're sticking to our guns. You know,
you're
a day late on your rental. That's $7. It's like, wait, it doesn't fucking work that way anymore. Like, you have to treat us like human beings and give us stuff for a reasonable amount of money, and then we will support you. So,
I mean, I think they know the writing's on the wall. The cable world getting smaller, you know, they're all trying to buy each other out between like Comcast attempting to buy Time Warner, and then I think Charter ended up buying them, and then DirecTV or AT&T just bought DirecTV. Like, it's getting smaller, which usually means that the amount of money there is getting smaller, so they need to consolidate to figure out how to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I don't know. Somebody's gonna figure it out at some point. There's too many disparate services right now, I think, for it to really, because I think somebody did the math. It was like Slate or somebody, that if you like cancel cable and then get all the things you want, you're still basically paying like $60-$70 a month. It doesn't change that much at the end of the day. But I guess it just feels like you have better choice, and maybe you're voting with your dollar at that point. I don't know. But let's take a break.
Yeah. Come back with some reviews.
Play some tunes.
Let's do it. The wrong answer. I can't say his last name. He doesn't want
me to
say his last name.
He just like grimaced. Oh yeah, I'll bleep his last name.
Okay. You forgot he works for like or some shit.
God. We saw Ant-Man.
We did. Yeah.
We both managed to see a movie.
I know, it's crazy. I think Marvel movies are kind of, you kind of have to see them in the theater.
Yeah.
Or at least I do, or else I feel like I've done something wrong. So
I agree. And I was like getting mad at my wife because we had not seen it yet. And I was like, I gotta see Ant-Man. And so like I finally, she's like, she has some new theory where she's like, I'll never say let's go to the movies. So just buy tickets and tell me we're going. And I'm like, that will never work. Literally ever.
Oh boy.
But yeah, so we went and saw Ant-Man. And I think we both said at the top that we were both pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I think, there was a lot of obvious negativity about this movie because of what happened with Edgar Wright. And I think a lot of, a lot of us Edgar Wright fans were kind of like, you just kind of came in with this bad taste in your mouth because you were always thinking of the film that could have been, because I think, I think his fight scenes, Edgar Wright's fight scenes, are just so unique and so energetic and so incredibly different from what we're used to seeing on the screen, that the idea of having those fight scenes in a Marvel film is something that I think everyone really wanted.
Yeah.
But in the end, I was really surprised with what I ended up seeing in Ant-Man. So
yeah, me too. I actually thought the fight scenes came out great at the end of the day. My overall view of the movie was I walked away like thinking, man, that was a really funny, different feeling Marvel movie. It didn't feel like this. While there was somewhat of a MacGuffin, it really wasn't the usual, that this guy's got an all-powerful jewel, we need to go save the world. It felt much smaller and more intimate than that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I enjoyed like a lot, because there is a sense of fatigue from the superhero movies, but I thought it was written really funny. Like, I thought the lines all delivered really well. If I had one gripe about the movie, it was that the first third to a half was relatively slow and kind of awkwardly forced in as far as the Hank Pym story goes.
Right.
Because for the people who have not read the comics, and I've honestly, to be fair, have not read a ton of Ant-Man comics, Scott Lang is not the original Ant-Man. It's Hank Pym. Hank Pym is a super scientist a la Tony Stark kind of level. And he creates this suit that with this thing called the Pym particle?
Pym particles, yeah.
And it allows him to shrink down to ant size. And then he has a helmet that allows him to psychically control ants.
I love that they kept all of that wonky, 1960s. Tech too.
Yeah.
It was like he still needs the helmet to control the ants. He's not just like allowed to control ants.
Right. Still he's got the little buttons on his gloves.
Right. Still need the buttons on the gloves. You still need the Pym particles to shrink and stuff like that. So they didn't future tech the shit out of it, which I really appreciated.
They really didn't. I thought that was great. But so Hank Pym creates the Ant-Man suit, creates all this stuff. And then in the comics, I don't really know this storyline other than being told and what I've read. But essentially, Scott Lang's daughter, I thought, was sick or something at some point, and he steals the Ant-Man suit, I think, to go steal money to get money for his daughter.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. His daughter had some sort of illness. Yeah.
And in the movie, they frame it slightly different where, and this is not spoiler-y, this is the beginning, but they frame it where Scott Lang is stealing the suit to pay child money. He wants to, he's actually not trying to steal a suit. He's breaking into a vault thinking there's money there so that he can pay child support and kind of be back in his daughter's life since he's been removed from it, and ends up finding the Ant-Man suit. And that's kind of the beginning of the whole plot line.
And Paul Rudd was great. I mean, the dude's great in everything, but he was really great. And the whole time I was watching him, I was like, I can really picture him with the other Avengers, he instantly, you can kind of see he was so well cast that you're like, oh, okay, I can see him with Captain America.
Right.
And with the Hulk. And I can see him with the rest of the characters actually fitting into the universe. So really well casted. I thought
the whole thing was cast very well. Like, I actually wasn't super upset with any of the casting. I thought everybody was really funny. His heist gang that he's with is
they're great.
Probably they steal the show. I mean, honestly, like the three of them are hilarious all the way through it and have some of the funniest lines in the entire movie. You know, you'd think it'd be all gold for Paul Rudd, but it ends up being those guys who tend to bring a lot of the comedy in a great way, and it's really fun. I thought Hank Pym. I thought Michael Douglas was good the whole time.
I thought he was. I tweeted this, but I kind of thought he was overused. I'm like, I understand you want to use Michael Douglas if he's in your movie, but I kind of felt like I didn't need, maybe because I know the backstory from the comics. Right. I didn't need that much backstory on his character. I just wanted to spend more time with Scott Lang going on like ant adventures. You know, like
why I felt like the first half was a little awkwardly paced, just because they're really trying to jam that Hank Pym story in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know why. It's because they're trying to introduce, like, there's background to all of this, and this guy is very integral to the Marvel universe. Because for those that don't read Marvel stuff, like, almost everything that's happened so far in the Marvel movies is actually Hank Pym, like, instigated. Not so much Tony Stark. They've kind of done a switcheroo on the storylines for the movies and put Tony Stark in a lot of places that Hank Pym was.
Right. And so the comics. Creation of Ultron and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the tech and Vision, I think, included. I think he is the creator of Vision originally, too. So, like, all of that is sort of like, I felt like they were trying to be like, oh, Hank Pym's also a really smart guy and it is important in the universe, and this is why this particle is really cool, and all this stuff, like, had to happen in like 45 minutes to 30 minutes, you know, as opposed to over this kind of thing. So it was, I do agree with you. That was a little like Michael Douglas heavy and a little awkwardly paced.
Yeah. And for those wondering if there are other superheroes, there are. We're not going to tell you who, but there are some. There's some surprise cameos, which I actually got ruined by a YouTube ad that popped up on my Facebook.
Did you really?
Yeah. They actually showed the surprise cameo in just a, like a 10-second YouTube ad.
Oh, that was on one of the trailers. I knew that cameo. Oh, I didn't know the rest of this because there's more scenes.
There's multiple cameos. There's some cool stuff if you're a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so. You will not be disappointed.
You will not.
It definitely opens things up for further Ant-Man action, which I hope happens. I think he'll bring a really neat dynamic and a light tone to the universe. I can't wait to see him like talking to Thor. Like, how fucking weird is that? like what? Like, Paul Rudd and Thor hanging out. You're like,
oh, I think it's going to be great. I think from the exchanges he has, it's like, oh, he's going to be great. Like, this is going to be an awesome addition to the Marvel Universe. He's kind of that breath of comedy air that they need, you know, right now, because it was getting a little like samey-sames with all the characters.
Well,
a little
Ultron
too often.
Was just so heavy. Ultron was such a fucking heavy, super serious movie. So,
yeah.
You know, I feel like this was great, and like you said, it does kind of harken back to those earlier Marvel films, like the Iron Man origin film, and you know, it has a supporting cast of like non-superhero characters doing funny stuff, and so it was good. I mean, like, I wouldn't mind watching more Marvel origin movies again. Like, we dissed on origins a lot, but then we got into like, you know, film like 7 and we're like, oh man, how many superheroes can you fit in a film at this point? So, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
And then the only thing I would close with is that there are two ending scenes. So don't leave early. You'll get one mid credits and one final credits. And a bunch of people walked out before the final one in my movie.
They
don't know about you.
They feel silly right now.
They are kind of a little like, it's just so expected now that you're just like, okay.
Right.
I'll just sit here and wait, you know. But one day we're going to have like 5 ending credits scenes.
Phase 7. We're like 80 years old. You going to see Phase 7? You going to see the Power Pack movie, man?
So I think our wrap up is go see Ant-Man. It's very good.
Yeah, definitely check it out. It's fun.
It is. It's super fun.
Uh-oh, guys. Spoiler alert.
We're going to spoil things?
We're going to spoil the crap out of Arkham Knight now. So if you're listening and you don't want Arkham Knight spoiled, I would say fast forward to about the last minute of the show.
Yeah.
Or, you know, follow us on Twitter @NerdAppropriate and Facebook @NerdAppropriate and everywhere else, and tune in every week as we talk about crap. But for now, we're going to spoil Arkham Knight because we have to do it.
We have to. We both beat it. No one else is here, so we can talk about it freely at the moment. And we're going to do that.
Yeah, let's do it. So let's start with just general impressions of gameplay and the city itself. So what did you think when you first hopped in?
We did the initial impressions of when I first hopped in, it is utterly gorgeous. The combat is buttery smooth. I don't know that they can perfect the combat any further. It almost feels like you're cheating while you're playing, which is weird. Like, you can be very good at it and get a lot of combos in, pull a lot of special secret stuff. And when you start mixing in the tech into your fighting, like, you can do fun and original things.
Right.
But for sure, it is buttery, buttery smooth. And then I thought the car in the beginning was awesome. Like, it was such a great entry scene. It's so much fun to drive around. I actually ended up enjoying the Riddler races more than I thought I would.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I struggled with the first one so bad because I was dumb and didn't understand what the puzzle part was.
Oh.
Like, how to control the puzzle.
Okay.
And then once I figured out how to control the puzzle, I was like, oh, and the rest of them fell in place at that point. I was like, I get it, and actually enjoyed it. And then the tank is good, but like you said early on, it gets to a point where you get too good at the tank, and... it just isn't challenging, and it's almost tedious, and they really force you into it a lot.
Yeah, they do. And there's a lot of like just massive tank battles in the game too, where you're like, okay, well, this is cool. Like, I would love this in like the next Deus Ex game, but it's weird in this Batman game to have this like tanky Batmobile fighting against, you know, swarms and swarms of drones. It just felt a little bit out of place, but but I liked it. It just was just different, you know. So
yeah, and it felt very mech like and was super easy to control and worked really well, and like, you know, there was nothing really wrong with it. I think it's the same thing with the combat. We talked a little bit about this off podcast, but there's my main gripes with the game are that not the story or the gameplay or anything along those lines. It's the fact that they forced you into certain things too often. They would force you into brawls on occasion, and they would force you into the tank. And it was just to a point where you're like, God, in comparison, let's think of a good mission set that you have to do. There's the Firefly mission set, right? Where you're going and you're stopping Firefly, and then you end up like on a race through the city, and you have to eject out of your car and catch him, right? Which is, it ends up being really fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's four of those, or five. There are, I want to say, 32 missions where you have to go disarm a bomb. It's like 17, but still.
Yeah.
Significantly more where you disarm a bomb and then get in a tank fight. And it's like, I don't understand why they... And then there's you know, 20 of the ones where you have to go to a thing and take down 12 guys. And then there's 20 of another thing where you go to a thing and take down 12 guys.
Right.
And, like, some of them are puzzle-ish, but they're not puzzle-ish in the way Arkham City was, where you put on detective mode and really have to, like, suss out how to do this and kind of, like, stealth in and out. It would just be, like, a flat level area with 12 guys inside of it and then nothing that you can do other than just jump in and start fighting.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it sounds like we're complaining, but there's such a huge variety. And then what they did is like they took these great elements. So they'll take like missions like you just said, where beat 'em up missions, but then they'll multiply it so you have to do it, like you said, like 20 times. And they'll take a stealth mission, they'll do the same thing. You'll do a stealth mission 20 times and like a disarm a bomb 20 times. So getting, you know, finishing the game is quite an undertaking. I remember like I had beaten the game already and I still had a couple of the firemen to find.
Oh,
and it
Jesus.
Took me four fucking ever to find all those firemen, to the point where I was just like, I just kind of want them to not make it through this night. You know,
I think I have six firemen left. I have three of the ground bases and I have one goddamn bomb that I cannot find to save my goddamn life. Because the thing is, I was talking to Ryan about it, and he's like, oh, well, they mark them on your map. And I'm like, no, they mark the ones you've seen on your map.
Yep.
They don't mark every single one of them. So when you've seen all, when you've finished all the ones you've seen, your job at that point is to just drive around the city until you find the other one.
Yeah, that's what I did with the firemen. I literally would fly around the city with my detective vision on, listening for like people being like, hey, we got you. We got you there, fireman.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm like, oh, I hear it. And then I'd stop and like rescue him. But and there's no way to find him.
What was weird about that, too, the decision they made was not that if you hear them talking that it would mark your map, even with like a general area. The decision they made was like you had to like land and then like look, and then they'd be like, those guys are there, and then they would mark your map. You know what I mean? Like, it was very odd. Like the bomb thing, you have to like drive up to and like stare at for a second, and then it's right. like, oh, cool, it's marked on your map now. So that kind of stuff is weird, and I think it's just because they were attempting to give the game more legs than the story. Because the story at the end of the day is honestly not super long. It's maybe, I don't know, how long do you feel like you actually played the story? 5-10 hours tops?
Yeah, maybe 10. But then everything else is like 50, you know?
Right, yeah, everything else is just huge. And then we haven't even mentioned yet the Riddler trophies.
I'm not touching them. I refuse to do those. They are literally the antithesis of what I like about that Batman game.
So Riddler has a sort of side story like he does in every game. In this one, you go and you have to rescue Catwoman from, and that's part of the driving puzzles that I was talking about. You go and you do these kind of like bigger puzzle-y games. Some of them are racing missions, and I think a couple of them are puzzles, and then some like fighting things you have to do with Catwoman to save her from Riddler. And then you'll do that, I think it's eight missions or six missions, something like that.
Yeah.
And you'll beat those, and you save Catwoman, and you're like, huzzah, I saved Catwoman. And then Riddler walks out in this big mech suit, right? And you're like, oh, cool, I'm gonna get a big Riddler fight. And then you punch him like once, and then he jumps away from you, and he's like, haha, Batman, not gonna do it this way, and then just like flies out of the building. And then he's like, you'll have to find all my trophies first. And I'm like, oh my God, there's 246
trophies. 246
trophies.
And they're all puzzles.
They're all puzzles. Some of them admittedly very simple puzzles. Some of them not as simple for idiots like me that can't figure out puzzles.
No, yeah, I'm right there with you, man.
I literally had to have Melissa sitting on the couch next to me just helping me through puzzles, which she loved. She was like, oh, I love puzzles, I'll do this. But I'm just like, I don't know what any... I'm like getting mad, like screaming at the screen.
Oh, it's crazy, because sometimes you'll have to like, now the Batmobile has to hang from that building, and you gotta jump out of the Batmobile, and then you gotta swing onto that thing and pull that lever. And you're like, yeah, this is not happening for 240 of these fucking things.
So the main storyline, we should say, is about you having been infected by the Joker. This is the spoilery stuff we didn't get into last episode.
Yeah.
But you were infected by the Joker's serum or blood? Blood serum? Something along those lines.
It's a mix of you got the Scarecrow gas in you, and you have Joker blood.
Yeah. And you are holding prisoner three other people that have been turned into Joker characters from his blood from the last game, and you have an empty prison there, and the story is that it's for you, that because you know you're turning to.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk about how amazing, so the other plot line is Arkham Knight, which we'll talk about next for a minute, but because we don't need to go on forever about both of these, but I wanted to talk about how amazing the Joker story was, though.
Oh, it's one of the coolest things ever. So throughout the game, you're constantly hallucinating that the Joker's there with you, and he kind of represents this dark part of Bruce Wayne's psyche and a lot of Bruce Wayne's failures and kind of this big fear that he is becoming, you know, his own worst enemy. So the whole time you're having this big internal monologue with the Joker, and the Joker appears throughout the narrative constantly, and he's constantly talking to you, and it becomes this kind of like fucked up buddy cop movie, you know, with like
amazing
Batman and Joker hanging out. Batman like is just kind of like shrugging his shoulders, you know, like Danny Glover style Lethal Weapon, and Joker's just, you know, rattling on about this and that, teasing him, and yeah. and, you know, offering to help sometimes. It's really, really brilliant. And the way that they weaved Joker into the game so seamlessly, like he'll just be like standing in an elevator or yeah. like leaning on the Batmobile. One time you get in the Batmobile and he's already in it, and he like you like yeah. pick him up and throw him out. You're like, what? Like, the game is just so polished, and the fact that they're able to add all of that is just so incredible to me.
It is amazing. And there are times where you will get into fights and start hallucinating that you're fighting all Jokers. And yeah. there'll just be like 20, 30, 40, 50 Jokers running at you, and you're brawling with all these guys, you know, until basically you pass out and wake back up, and you've you know, beaten up a few hoodlums, and otherwise you were just hallucinating everything. It is, I agree, 100% flawless. Like, when you're watching all the Joker interactions and how that story progresses, because there is a storyline of the Joker where every time you get gassed by the Scarecrow, you kind of have these, like, fits of visions with the Joker. And there's a final one at the end that I wouldn't even spoil here, because it's just so brilliantly done and, like, so well played. And it almost turns into, like, a horror game for, like, a short 5-10 minutes of you playing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So the Joker stuff is amazing. And then the Arkham Knight story, did you predict that super early? Because I felt like I did.
No, I did. I thought it was an interesting route to take. So basically, you know, we'll just spoil it. So definitely plug your ears. But Arkham Knight is Jason Todd.
Yes.
And for anyone who's ever read Batman stuff, you know that Jason Todd is... you know, he goes on to become the Red Hood, but he's also, you know, the third, I think third Robin. He was the third.
The, yeah. The
third.
Second or third. Dick Grayson. Second. Dick second. Grayson. Then Jason Todd.
Then Jason Todd. Then Tim Drake.
Tim. Yeah.
So he goes on to, well, he was Robin, and Bruce Wayne fails to save him from the Joker, and the Joker blows him up in the comics. And the cool thing about that story was everyone hated his character so much that the DC Comics actually put a poll in the back of their comic that said, should Jason Todd live or die? And the fan community voted to kill him.
Yeah.
but then he goes on to become
Jason Todd.
I know, poor Jason Todd, but he goes on to become a pretty popular character after he comes back as sort of this avenging badass in DC Comics. But they did a cool twist on that, and so they made him into the Arkham Knight, which is kind of a twisted version, I guess, of the Red Hood, you know?
Yeah, the Red Hood does start out as a bad guy, but he's sort of like an anti-hero bad guy. I don't think he's straight up evil. He walks a weird line, sort of like the Punisher, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
He just always felt betrayed by Batman. And in this one, they play that up to, like, you know, ten times, you know, that amount of aggression towards Batman, to the point where he's raised an army to come after him.
Right, right. I thought it was really well done. They do a lot of flashback sequences where, you know, through the Joker serum and the Riddler concoction, you're actually seeing Batman's psyche about all this guilt he has for letting Jason Todd die. So you get to see reenactments of Joker's assassination of Jason Todd, and you know, and I thought it was really well done. It also kind of it plays into how protective he is of both Nightwing and Robin,
yeah.
and Oracle. He feels really guilty for this loss. And so he's always, like, throughout this night, you're always like, well, why doesn't he just let Robin do this? Or why doesn't he let Nightwing do this? It's like, he's kind of trying to keep them out of the thick of things, like a dad, 'cause he doesn't want them to get blown up again, you know? So, I thought it was really well done. I thought that the design for Arkham Knight was really cool as well.
And yeah.
I'm kind of pissed that you can get that skin for Batman, but you have to have the PC version.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's the Dark Knight Returns Frank Miller skin, which I really want, which is right now PC only, and the Arkham Knight skin, which is PC only.
Huh.
Which bugs the shit out of me, but whatever. They'll be released eventually. You know how that goes, but.
Yeah. 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 Of course.
Yeah.
Do you play with the skins? I haven't played with a skin at all.
I played the whole game with anime skin.
Oh, did you really?
It is awesome looking. It looks more like a vampire Batman. So, like, it's just, like, super, super cool.
I might actually story plus this one. And if I do, I'll probably put it, because I think I might get the classic.
Nice.
They just released it for Xbox. Which one? What's his name?
Michael Keaton.
Was
that out already?
I think it's either out or out really soon.
I know
that came out with the Batgirl.
Well, that comes out with the Michael Keaton one, comes with the Michael Keaton Batmobile too.
Oh yeah.
An all new Batmobile design, which I'm dying to check out. If that comes out, I'll definitely new game plus it, because I had that much fun with it.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to talk really quick about the Barbara Gordon scene.
So I was gonna hint at this by saying this game goes dark and goes very dark and very little problem going dark. It does stories that are both the Jason Todd, the Barbara Gordon, the Joker, all of them are very, very dark. Like, they're not happy. There's no joking. I mean, the Joker adds comedy, but not to that extent.
Right.
So, but early on, and probably the first oh shit moment of this game, Barbara Gordon is kidnapped by the Scarecrow.
Right. And it's an awesome scene. You have to kind of, you have to track her. You have to do this really awesome sort of forensics Batman mission where you watch her, you know, how she escaped from a moving car. You have to track her. I mean, some of the missions are brilliant with all the forensic stuff.
They are, yeah.
But then you track her to this little room, and she has been given this dose of Riddler, not sorry, Riddler gas, of Scarecrow gas, and she fucking puts a gun to her head and pulls the trigger. And
yes.
And you're left for probably, I would say I was left for about 15 hours worth of gameplay thinking that Barbara Gordon shot herself in the head. And it was awful feeling. I literally, when it happened, not to cut you off, when it happened, I went to the bathroom, I sat on the toilet, I got on Twitter, and I was like, something just fucking terrible happened in Batman, and I hope it's not because of something I did. And I had a couple people tweet me and say, just hang in there, it'll be okay. They didn't spoil it, but they kind of told me that it was going to be okay, and I was like, thank God, because...
I literally retraced my steps. I said, wait, what led to this moment? Did I do something wrong? And I was like... No, I had to do that. I had to do that. And I was like, I can't figure out if this is right or not. Like, maybe I could have prevented this. And then I didn't go to Twitter. I forget how I found out, but I was like, oh, I think I was talking to Ryan and he had the same thing happen. And I was like, okay, this just has to be part of the story. Like, that is crazy. You know, like, it's crazy that they went that dark. And did you mention the Joker part, how it was done?
No, I don't think I did.
So it's one of those amazing moments with the Joker where she puts a gun to her head, or she's picking up the gun and starting to put it to her head, and Joker like pops up in your field of vision, and he is tormenting you this whole time with it, telling you how terrible you are and how you've screwed up yet again and you're going to lose another person. And then when she gets the gun up to his head, he puts his hand shaped as a gun to his head as he's making fun of you, and then pulls the trigger and falls over with her. So you have this like crazy vision of these two people. It is done again just so amazingly. It's unbelievable that they were able to pull off this level of like cinematography and story moments, you know. Like, while the story may not be the most in-depth crazy thing you've ever read or played in your life, there are moments in it that I would put up there with some of the best game moments I've played.
Oh, yeah, anyway. It's great. No, it really is. Like, and I'm curious. I mean, this is the last Batman game that Rocksteady's doing. So to see what this studio does next is really going to be interesting, because
I think Yeah,
they have a lot of talent at that studio. So,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, the game is the first game where I've where I'm like, oh, this is like a next gen game. Like,
oh, for sure. There's moments where crazy beautiful. There was moments where I didn't realize I was in a like in game moment, like where I was standing there like talking to Alfred, and I didn't realize that like the camera could pan around and that stuff was still happening around. Like, I could keep walking, doing things. So I was like, this is crazy looking.
Yeah, we should also really say quickly, there are, for those of you who are fans of the Batman's Rogues Gallery, they're all there. So you have like Hush and Man Bat and Riddler and Deathstroke's in there for a bit. A little Penguin, Two-Face, and basically,
which I guess is part of what like my gripes with the all of the Arkham Knight things that they loaded real heavy onto the mission things was that all of the other Rogues Gallery's there, and those all felt really small. Like, I felt they were small. Could have blown those up a little bigger, I guess, is the best way to put it. I don't know. But I mean, it's such a minor gripe for a game that we obviously just drooled over for.
Yeah.
And it's like, It is a phenomenally polished, well done game. And right up, I should, you know, admit that it is right up my alley as far as narratives go. It's not like it's open world to an extent, but really it's a narrative driven game that is super, super good.
I think everyone should get it and definitely get the Harley Quinn DLC and the Batgirl DLC. They're both short, but they're fun. And
did you do the back? I heard the Batgirl wasn't as good as we all expected it to be. Did you?
You know, it was short. It had some super cool moments. Like playing as her was awesome.
Yeah.
It wasn't as polished as the main Batman game though. Like you could tell her animations weren't quite as fluid and her model wasn't quite as polished, but I really enjoyed it. There was some cool, it definitely felt like the old animated series, because it had Harley in her old original Batman animated series outfit, and Joker, like, you know, was kind of dressed up a little bit more like the animated series. So it takes place, I guess before the first game is when it's supposed to take place. So it's pretty cool.
That's cool.
It's fun.
Which Batgirl was it? It's
Barbara Gordon.
Oh, it was Barbara Gordon.
Yeah, it's like young Barbara Gordon too. So she's, I think, like just freshly Batgirl. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it was fun. Good times.
Yeah, go pick up Batman. It is fun, and go watch Ant-Man, and then pick other things that have the words ant or some kind of animal and a man.
Yeah.
Titles.
Donkey Man. Oh, that's gross.
You backed off your own joke.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to episode 210 of the Rated NA podcast. You guys can find us on Twitter, and that's at Nerd Appropriate. You can go to our Facebook page, which is /Nerd Appropriate. You can subscribe on that button. We have all sorts of San Diego Comic-Con goodies from the past couple weeks and all sorts of special interviews and fun stuff. And we'll be traveling a little bit, but the guys will be at PAX running around talking to people, which will be exciting. So we have some PAX coverage coming up at the end of the month, too.
Yeah. So please, if you have not listened to those San Diego Comic-Con interview episodes yet, go back, grab them. They're all really great for different reasons. I got to listen to them many times and I enjoyed them. But go pick those up and we'll see you guys out there.
Later, guys.
Can afford.
And Matt will give you a virtual toe rub.
Ew.
Possibly. Really depends on what that means.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. You know what I mean, guys, right? So what's on this week's show, Matt?
I'm gonna let that one hang even longer. That was sort of a dick joke.